You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey everyone, welcome to Page to Stage,
a conversation with theater makers.
We're your hosts.
That's Brian.
And that's Mary.
Join us as we focus the spotlight back on the theater maker to uncover their process.
We speak with folks in the industry that often aren't heard from,
such as stage managers, producers, crew members, marketing professionals,
and everything in between. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Hi, my name is Cody Renard Richard, and I am a stage manager.
Welcome. I'm so excited to have you here. You've definitely been on my list for quite some time, and I will get into how a little bit later.
I'm interested in starting out with what were some of the first opportunities that you got after graduating with a BFA in stage management from Webster University Conservatory?
I graduated college, and I worked at Stages St. Louis, and then I worked at Kansas City Rep. Right after college, and I got my equity card at Kansas City Rep, and this was in September. I had always knew that I was going to move to New York throughout college. Like, New York was the goal ever since my sophomore year. So I knew my plan was to move in the fall. And by a strike of luck or God or whatever, the universe, I was doing the show in Kansas City, and I got a call about a Cirque du Soleil show in New York City at Madison Square Garden, asking if I was available. And I lied and said that I was. And I left that show early and moved to New York to do this Cirque show at Madison Square Garden. And that was like my first show in New York.
I always love when a story includes like, and I lied.
Well, sometimes you gotta do what you gotta do to make it happen.
Yeah, no, totally. And then it always makes a great story, but also like it launches your career most likely. So
I knew it wasn't a lie that I couldn't back up. You know what I mean? It was like, I'm planning to be there. What are the dates? Like, I can figure this out.
How can you connect the dots from that to your first Broadway gig?
So I finished Cirque. Cirque was a 2 to 3 month show at Madison Square Garden, which was amazing. And it was one of the biggest things I've ever worked on. You know, I was what, 21, 22. It was amazing. And then the show closed, as they do, because it was a limited engagement. And I was like, all right, I just did this thing at Madison Square Garden. What's next? Like, it has to be something cool, right? And I had no idea how to find a job in New York City. Like, you aren't really taught that in undergrad unless you have connections here and whatever. I didn't know what to do. So I got on Playbill, and ultimately my goal was to work on Broadway. So I got on Playbill and I looked for like job postings and listings, couldn't find anything. The Transport Group was doing a show called Hello Again, and they just put out a press release. I saw that that there were a bunch of Broadway actors in the show, and my reasoning was, you know, if I could be in a room with a bunch of Broadway people, then that'll just get me closer to getting on a show or like getting, you know, get connections. And it was just a bunch of actors, but I was like, at least I can be around people who do this. So I reached out to the Transport Group. Jack Cummings was the director, and he hired me as a PA. He was like, we're a small company, so we can't really pay you. We can pay you $50 in a Metro card. And I was like, great. So I did that show. And then they did another show called Estrada Jones. I stayed and did that show as a PA off Broadway. So I essentially worked for them for about 9 months for $50 because I was trying to get my foot in the door. And then luckily, Liz Estrada Jones moved to Broadway. And when that happened, through a series of events, they brought me on.
Would you recommend that, you know, taking that $50 in the Metro card to young up and coming stage managers or even just theater makers in general? Like, would you recommend that? I mean, it sounds like I've also gone through that myself, like full disclosure, but I'm just always curious, like now looking where we are as an industry now, like if that's really what we want to be promoting.
I mean, I'll say a couple things on that. I think that you have to take a chance for your dream, but also think that you have to survive. So if by taking that show, you can't survive and live and eat and do that things, then do those things, then absolutely don't do it. The other thing I would say is that all internships need to be paid, you know, a living, a minimum wage at the bare minimum. But I do stand by, you know, sometimes you have to take a chance to get to where you want to be, but as long as it doesn't detract from your livelihood.
When did you take the leap from PA to assistant stage manager on Broadway?
So my first show on Broadway on contract was Motown. I had PA'd about 3 or 4 shows before that, but my first actual show on contract was Motown.
Since we like to focus on process here, I'm curious as to looking back, so looking at your first few shows even, how your process preparing as a stage manager, preparing each show, each new contract, like what that looked like for you at the beginning, and then we can talk about what that looks like to you now.
Preparing for a new show in my earlier days was equal parts simple and equal parts not. only because of the responsibilities that you get as a PA. I was hired for Ghost. I did Ghost the Musical right after Liz Estrada Jones.
Which I
was
hired. Absolutely loved. I saw it 3 times in a month.
Are you serious?
Yeah, the closing month. I absolutely loved it.
Amazing.
Went to closing. I loved it that much.
Oh, amazing. I love that. So yeah, I worked on that show and I got hired for that show 2 days before rehearsal started. So yeah, preparing for that was basically getting dressed and going to work. You know what I mean? So it changes as you get more responsibility, I guess. But you know, I would research who was in the show. I would look up who the designers were and stuff because I was younger and I didn't know these people. So I wanted to have some type of context about what they did. So if I were asked something of them, I would know. So that's kind of really all I did as a PA because I didn't really know what my responsibilities would be.
Do you think it's a responsibility of the stage manager to be familiar with all areas of theater, like all different jobs that are available? Or do you think it's, I mean, could you argue that it's everyone should know? Everyone who works in the industry should be aware of all jobs?
I mean, I think it certainly helps that if everyone is aware of what everybody does, just because once you know what people do, you probably have a little bit more respect for what they do. Specifically for stage managers, I think it's absolutely important to know what everyone does because we work with everyone. We have a hand in almost every department, no matter how big or small. So it just helps to know what they do.
From the times that you were brought on when the process was just starting versus the times that you've replaced into shows, can you talk about the differences in process between those two experiences? You know, when you jump into The Lion King that's been running for so long, how does that differentiate between, I don't know, something that you just started with from the beginning?
Like Freestyle Love Supreme.
Right.
Well, those are so polar opposite. And what I was going to say, like jumping into The Lion King is overwhelming because it's a huge show and it's been running for so long and everyone is comfortable in what they do. And, you know, everyone has they already have an existing family. So it's a bit overwhelming to walk in and to like find a way to fit in or to learn the show and just start, you know, because a lot of people are going through the motions because they've been doing it for a long time. So like to get into that rhythm is a little overwhelming at first, which I would say is normally different from a show that you start from the beginning. But Freestyle Love Supreme was also overwhelming because they had been a group for the last 15 to 20 years. Like they've known each other forever. So those two shows have very similar patterns. But a normal show, like starting it from the beginning, I enjoy more because you get to help create it. You have a little bit more ownership of what you do, a little bit more say in how the process works, a little bit more, it's more collaborative. And that to me, I enjoy a lot more.
So I'm so glad that you mentioned going through the motions and the people that have been with shows for so long, just, you know, go through the motions. So for the Lion King, I mean, it doesn't have to be for the Lion King specifically, but for those productions that you've worked on where you've noticed that people just start going through the motions, how does that feel from you from a stage management's perspective, especially because you're part of the creative team in that sense and you're kind of the director's eye after they've left?
Yeah, I think there's a difference though and, you know, going through the motions and being complacent in your job. So like there are people who I think that show up and do it and they're going through the motions, but they're less enthusiastic off stage or they're less enthusiastic about how they approach it. And, you know, and it's, I guess it's fine because they're doing the job in the way that they should. And then there's the flip side of that to people. You know, there are some people who are with shows for a very long time and they get a little bit lazy in the way they approach things. And you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
So that's a little bit frustrating. But also, you know, it's hard to stay engaged and it's hard to say to stay full out all the time when you've been with the show for sometimes 5 years or 3 years or 15, you know?
Right. You know, the reason I ask is because I've heard a lot of actors talk about how they feel when they go into a show where there are a bunch of people who have been there for a long time and maybe aren't putting their full 100% in there. So I was just wondering if that experience was a little different from the stage management's perspective, not being on stage with everybody else, but still being a part of that, putting the best show out there every night.
Yeah, I mean, that energy is definitely palpable. Like if you walk into an environment where the energy is pretty low because everybody's tired and everybody's, you know, done with the week or done with whatever because they've been doing it, like that energy, you can feed off of that and you sort of sometimes can get into that rhythm too. For me, though, I usually vibrate at a high frequency. I like to make people feel good and I like to feel good myself. So anytime I'm in that environment, I seek out the people who are like-minded and try to, you know, try to get other people to be happy and to enjoy what they're doing, because I think that is really important.
Are there other, I mean, aside from being around those people, are there other ways that you keep yourself motivated if you're on a longer run, or if you feel like you've hit a slump? Are there things that you do to kind of recall those feelings of excitement and those positive emotions?
Or do those times that you feel that, is that when you know that it's time to move on to the next job?
Interesting question. I think for me, whenever I feel a little burnt out or I feel a little bit like, oh, I gotta go to work today, then I know it's time for a vacation. Or I know that I need to, no, seriously, or I know that I need to, you know, spend more time with my friends or like do more things outside of the theater. I have a big social life, so I make sure that I see people. So like my life is not only my job. I have to remember that I love what I do. And in order for me to love what I do, I have to do other things outside of the theater as well. So that's kind of like what I do to keep myself going when I'm in those situations.
I feel like you're just speaking directly to me in this moment, because I mean, right before we like officially started recording, we were kind of sidebarring about just like self-care and quarantine specifically, but just like, I'm so bad at like remembering to just take vacations, which sounds so, it just sounds so silly, but like.
No, it's not though. You have to make yourself do it. Years ago, I never went on vacations, but I went to Australia to visit a friend. And ever since then, I was like, I have to take a big vacation outside of the US. Like every year I have to, no matter where I'm at financially or what I'm doing, I have to figure it out. So that's what I've been doing. Every year I leave. I'd go somewhere.
Oh, I love that.
I think this is a great time to ask you what your favorite part of your job is.
I love collaborating with people. I'm a people person, so I enjoy interacting with people. I enjoy the responsibility of people coming to me for questions or for concerns or whatever. Like I thrive in that environment. So I think that is one of the reasons why I love stage managing so much, because I get to interact with everyone and I get to help problem solve things for everyone and I get to mediate and facilitate. And like, I know those are a lot of different answers, but essentially it all comes back to just collaborating with people. I really enjoy getting to work with so many people in the theater and being that person for them to come to when they need something for the show or information or whatever, and like carrying that out. And, you know,
at least the stage management job feels like it's a perfect marriage between like administration and creation.
Yeah,
I don't know if you feel that.
A little bit. I mean, there is a lot of administration. There's a lot of there's a little bit of creation. There's a little bit of management. So like, I feel like I get a little bit of each world. You know what I mean? Like, you know, we have to make sure that the show stays on track during tech. Like we have to manage time and things and stuff like that. So I think it's a little bit of almost each part of what you get from the, you know what I mean? So like, I like that.
See, I'm curious as to, I think we asked this of Christy, of our stage manager guest from episode one, but so calling a show to me sounds so daunting and I don't know what it is about it, but I'm always curious to know like what your thoughts are on it and what was like, if you even remember your first time you ever called a show and like what that felt like.
I remember my first time calling a Broadway show. I'll never forget it. It was Motown, and Motown was a pretty big show. It had all those posts that moved across the stage. We had holes in the floor and it was long. So there was a lot of things that went into it. But I remember my first time calling, I was so nervous. I was so nervous. And when it was over the next day, my PSM, Julia Jones, came up to me and she was talking to me and she was like, okay, you got that out of the way. Today, breathe and be personable. Because at the top of the show, you check in with the crew. And I, you know, I'm a very personable person. But I guess the way I checked in with the crew, I was very much like, Spots, are you there? Like, because I was so nervous and I was trying to make sure that I did everything right. So she was like, just breathe and, you know, talk. Don't, you know. So I'll never forget that. But calling a show is exciting. It's exhilarating. It's like you're the commander of the ship. It's also nerve-wracking and it's all of those things.
I just feel like there are certain cues where you probably like don't, like how do you breathe through them? I'm sure there are some cues, and I'm going back to what I know of Hamilton. I know that there's like a few, probably the entire show, but I know there are a few numbers where it's just like cue after cue after cue. And it's like, how do you breathe? How do you find that timing? How do you like balance that all within yourself? Like, just a lot. I give you guys a lot of props.
Well, you know, calling a show is like choreography. You know, a lot of our cues are on counts. And when we set up the book, we figure out like the language to say to, you know, to make sure that you can execute the cues at the right time. You know what I mean? So like, it's a lot of dancing with the cues, which is also kind of fun, especially on a musical.
How did the live televised musicals that you've worked on come into your career?
I started with The Wiz Live, and I basically got that show because The Wiz was a co-production with Cirque du Soleil and NBC. And because I primarily had a background in Broadway and musicals and also had worked for Cirque, I reached out to the team at NBC and I was like, I feel like I have the perfect background for this. I would love to be considered, interviewed. And then, you know, I interviewed and they brought me on, and that was kind of how I got involved with those.
Was there like a call for that? Was there like a listing that was posted somewhere? Or was that purely just like you just reaching out cold to these executives or whoever was a part of NBC?
That was me Googling who was directing The Wiz, who was and like finding names and then finding people that knew them and then finding email addresses and then sending an email. That's basically how that happens.
Yeah. Well, it just proves, I mean, that has proven to be true, at least in a few people that I know's lives. If you want it badly enough, like you're going to make that work. You're going to do the extra 10 miles if you need to. And I mean, what an experience, because you went on to not only do Just the Wiz, but you did Hairspray Live. You did Jesus Christ Superstar Live.
And what were those shows like, you know, what were your responsibilities during the process and what part of the process did they bring you in?
So for all three of those, I was there from beginning to end. Mainly because I do have a theater background. So we rehearsed the show as if it's a Broadway show. We rehearse for 5 weeks in a rehearsal studio. So all of those structures and things are in place as if we are doing a Broadway rehearsal. So that part was felt very second nature to me, which was great. And then after that, we moved on to set. And that's when, that's when the learning curve began, because we added cameras and we did all these dry blocking exercises and all these things that I wasn't used to. So like what is normally our tech rehearsal, became a different set of thing because it's television. So I was there from the beginning to the end for all three of those productions.
Now, just looking at the three shows, so The Wiz was on a stage. Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah, oh, well, it was in a sound stage, but it was they built a proscenium stage, so it looked as if it was in a theater.
But it wasn't like Hairspray, where it was felt very much like it was like a movie, like on Universal Studios, like lot.
Right. Right. Hairspray, I think, was shot on like 20 different locations. We would have to ride golf carts to get from place to place.
Oh, my God. And how many stage managers were on, I guess, Hairspray? Like how many? What was that team?
I think we had 16, maybe. There's a lot.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, you're trying to cover a lot of ground, like literally a lot of ground.
Yeah, exactly.
I always like to think of the stage manager as the liaison between the creative team and the performers. I don't know if you see it that way, but I'm wondering, as a Black stage manager working on many productions with BIPOC performers, how are your experiences working with white creative teams versus BIPOC creative teams?
Primarily, most of the shows, with the exception of Motown, I'm grasping at straws, but I think has been led by white creatives. And it's always an interesting time for me because the cast primarily looks to me for certain things, just because I can relate with them, which is nice because there's a comfortability that's there. But I do find sometimes, and this is not on every show, but sometimes when I have white creatives who are, at the helm of a Black production, they tiptoe around how they want to, go about things because they don't want to
give notes and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's just an interesting tactic that I find. It's like they don't feel like they can be completely free, or like they don't really, or the big thing too is that they don't really have the knowledge or the lived experience of the show that they are helming. And I think that is huge, because the people, most times the people that they cast, have lived this stuff, so they can actually probably school the creatives on what it's like to be in this time period or whatever.
Those circumstances. Yeah,
exactly. So there's a lot of like, I want you to do this because this, and they're like, no, actually that, you know what I mean? Like, so it's a lot of that.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was wondering, because you probably are in a lot of the conversations on both ends of those spectrums, with the creative team, and then you're with the cast, and it's like, how do you find that balance for yourself of like, I don't know, do you ever consider yourself an advocate for performers when the creative team is around?
Absolutely. I try to be, especially as I've gotten older and as I've felt like I've established my voice and my place in the theater, I try to be an advocate as much as I can, especially if I have the power to do so. Sometimes it's not as easy. And so there have been times where I've failed and not have done it, but I try to, yes. If someone feels like they need assistance with something, or if someone feels like they need to, they need someone to speak up for them, absolutely. I try to be that voice for them, because it's important, especially in these spaces that aren't necessarily built for Black and brown people.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting. I mean, obviously, with everything that's been going on with racism in our industry, I never even realized that Broadway doesn't have human resources department. Like it, and then someone had mentioned that, it kind of falls on the stage manager's hands or shoulders. And so I don't know if I agree with that, but I'm curious if, as a stage manager, if you agree with that statement or if you have other thoughts on that.
I mean, I do agree with it a little bit. It falls at the hands of whoever management is, company management, stage management, or general management, but oftentimes your stage manager is your first line of defense. So if there's something going wrong or something, if there's an issue in the theater, they come to you with that issue. For me, being a Black stage manager, if there's an issue involving race, the person in the show normally comes to me first, just because I'm a familiar face and I can understand what it is, in addition to me being a stage manager. So I do agree that the stage manager is the first line of defense, and that we're having to mediate a lot of situations, whether it's race or just personal whatever.
So I'm curious, because obviously we've been shut down for I can't even tell you how long anymore, but you know, when Broadway does open back up, how do you see your job changing, your physical job as a stage manager changing within the industry?
Well, I mean, we've been shut down for too long to answer that. But I feel like our jobs will change a little bit or drastically. I mean, for me, it's involving like race and inclusion and equity and all that stuff. My job doesn't change there, because all I have to do is show up and advocate for the people who needs it. So like for me, specifically about me as a stage manager, that doesn't change for me. As far as like being a stage manager post-COVID because of this virus, I think there's going to be a lot of extra care and a lot of extra caution that has to go into what we do and the decisions that we make and the people that we bring on and all of that stuff. And like the way we check certain props and the way we check people into the theater and all. And I think there's probably going to be a new system put in place. I have no idea what theater is going to look like when we come back, but I can only imagine that there's going to be a lot more systems regarding safety and health that we're all going to have to deal with.
And as far as your role that you play as a theater maker in the Broadway industry, the theater industry as a whole, you know, since June, probably a little bit before June, but over the last, you know, 2 months-ish, you've appeared on several news stations, podcasts, on virtual online forums, talking about the industry and talking about the racism within the industry and how we as an industry can move forward and be better and be more inclusive and equitable. And so do you think that will also continue through in the same way, meaning like continued virtual forums or podcast conversations or I'm not really sure about live events, to be honest, but you know, maybe that as well, like as we open back up and as we, you know, reshape what Broadway looks like?
I mean, it should. You know, this issue isn't going to be resolved overnight. You know, we've been dealing with being considered a minority or an other, or, you know, we've been dealing with diversity and inclusion for years and racism for years. Like, this is not going to be solved in my lifetime, in your lifetime. But what I will say, in every conversation that we have, in every panel that we do, in every event that is hosted, in every organization that has started, it moves the needle forward. And we have to continue to move the needle forward if we're going to actually see change. So I think it would behoove us to continue doing these things. And the people who are in power, who are attending these seminars and events and stuff, it's in their hands to actually, you know, take this practice into their daily lives and to actually put action to what they're talking about, you know. And it's also our responsibility too, as artists, to start to create our own and hold people accountable across the board.
Yeah, and I think even more so when theater opens back up eventually, the industry will be very focused on that particular thing, the business.
I mean, I hope so.
No, I know. I mean, I actually mean like just the business of opening back up.
Oh, right.
So I think it's going to be, you know, everybody's job that is going to keep this in the back of their minds and the forefront of their minds to speak out and continue the work when theater opens back up, to not let things slip.
Yeah. Well, there's a new sense of awareness now. Like, this time has, as unfortunate as it's been, there's a new sense of awareness for people who have not been aware of these issues that have been going on for so many years. So I think that's a positive thing that we can look at, is that now that people are aware, hopefully, you know, they can move forward with better decisions. You know, when you know better, you do better.
No, right. I mean, especially since a lot of us have had a lot of time. We have a lot of time to really listen to what the conversations are and what people are saying and then go one step further during this quarantine and like figure out how we can take action and how we can start to implement so that when we do open up that we're not playing catch up, if that makes sense. I mean, that's just been my experience with the jobs that I have currently, you know.
If it's all right with you, Mary, I was wondering if we can move into Cody's teaching and mentorship.
Yes, absolutely.
You're an adjunct professor of stage management at Fordham, and you've also taught at, you know, some other schools like Yale, NYU. So can you talk a little bit about your experiences getting into teaching and how you made that jump?
Yeah, teaching is not something that I ever sought out. I never necessarily wanted to be an educator. I love engaging with young professionals and students. One of the things that I love the most is inspiring people to be their best self and to chase their dreams. So I think it was kind of birthed from that. I do a lot of speaking and Q&As and stuff. And I, you know, I've done like lectures at Yale and NYU and Ithaca. And in doing that, I think that led to me, that just paved the way for me to start teaching at Fordham. So when I was approached to teach at Fordham, I almost turned it down because I'm busy and it was just never, and to be completely honest, yeah, and I just never thought of it. But I'm so grateful that I did it because I learned so much about myself and I learned so much about the students that I was teaching, and it really just made me, it kind of just made me a better artist through that, if that makes any sense. But through my passion of just trying to empower people and make people realize their greatness, I think that's how I, you know, got to teaching.
Yeah, I was going to say for a stage manager specifically, to be able to adjunct while you're still working, how does that work logistically with your time? Because stage managers, you know, rehearsals and evenings, and do you just like carve out, you know, 2 days a week at a certain time and just commit to it,
Mondays,
or do you work it around your whatever you're working on?
You kind of make it work. For Fordham, my class met once a week and we met early in the morning. So if I was in rehearsal, I would only have to miss like an hour and a half, or I would bring, you know, a guest speaker in to be with the class when I wasn't there. I only been at Fordham for a semester. I was only there for the last semester, and we were cut short because of COVID. So that kind of worked itself out, I guess.
What's like one piece of advice that you would always give some sort of up and coming stage manager, whether it be a student or somebody that just reaches out to you on social media or stage door?
I get asked this question a lot and I change the answer every time.
It just depends. We're keeping it fresh.
Exactly. It just depends on what my mood is. And today I think I would tell people two things. The first one is to be yourself and be kind, because that goes a long way. People want to work with people who are authentic and who are kind. You know, I would much rather work with someone who shows up and I know exactly who they are and who's nice and willing to learn, as opposed to someone who is rude and, you know, putting on this type of disguise and very, you know, good at what they do. You know what I mean? Like, I would much rather go with person A. And the other thing I would say, because I really feel like we're lacking in hope right now. I feel like our current state of affairs, no one is giving us hope. And so I would tell people to never give up on their dreams, to like know that if there is something that they really want to do, go for it, you know? And I think that's important for people to hear.
Well, I really like that your piece of advice changes based on the day, because truly, I think that that says a lot about why you're giving a piece of advice at a certain time. And I think that I'm going to pay attention to that a little more when I, you know, ask people that question for this, or just in life in general, or listening to podcasts myself.
And then, you know, sometimes like it changes, but like there's always a common thread because it's unique to who
it's
you
still
are.
You.
Like, like I was speaking the other day and I kind of said a version of this, but it was it came from a different place. So the message might have been different, you know.
And I also, for any of our listeners who have listened to several episodes now, will probably catch the common thread of what you, Cody, just said of, you know, being kind, being yourself, because that is, no one wants to work for, you know, whether it's 3 days or 6 years or 10 years, like no one wants to work with someone who's not nice.
And it's exhausting. Who isn't,
yeah. And it's just not, it doesn't, talent really doesn't, I mean, talent gets you so far really in this industry. It's really about who you are as the individual that's going to then propel your career. So I think that really speaks volumes. I also just wanted to say that, so I kind of teased this at the beginning when we were starting to chat, but so the first time that I was ever introduced to you was through an Instagram takeover that you did on Hamilton's Instagram account. And I was so blown away at the fact that they were featuring someone who was not an actor.
That was
before Brian and I made this podcast, but it has always been a huge part of who I am was, you know, learning about those people who are not performers, who are not always featured, you know, on all of the platforms or in the literal spotlight, but the people who are also doing just as hard, you know, hard work behind the scenes. And so I thought that, you know, I think I was in grad school when that happened, but I was immediately drawn to like these young performers, these kids, these up and coming theater makers. Like I'm so curious as to like what your Instagram takeover, like what kind of impact that had on them. And I'm not sure if you remember or could even go back to it, but I don't know if anyone had reached out to you, like any aspiring stage managers or even just like non-actors who reached out to you and asked questions, or even actors who reached out. Like, do you remember kind of any feedback that you got?
Oh, absolutely. I don't remember specifically feedback, but I do remember from that moment on, there were a lot of people who I didn't know who reached out, either emailed me or like followed me on my own personal Instagram and like asked me questions or, you know, told me that I was inspiring for them. And that was crazy just because, you know, as stage managers, we rarely do this for the reward or like, you know what I mean? So like we're rarely visible in that way. So in doing that takeover, it just exposed so many other people to a different job, which I think is so cool. Right now there's this thing called Year of the Stage Manager that Amanda Spooner, who's a stage manager in New York, who she created this, and it's basically to raise awareness and increase visibility and to celebrate stage managers. And it's really cool because a lot of people who didn't know who a stage manager was or what they do are being exposed to that. And I think that is really, it's really important just because we're rarely in the limelight, and that's okay. But it's nice for people to know that we exist. And also, speaking as a Black stage manager, I don't know very many. I mean, I've gotten to know more as I've gotten older and as I've like actively seeked people out. But I, coming up, didn't know any until, you know, 3 or 4 years into me living in New York. So I think that's important too, just to let, you know, younger generations know that people look like you are doing this and doing it well, you know?
I think, yeah, I was going to say representation matters. Like, I feel like every day I just say that, and that's, you know, it's exactly what you just said, which I think is so special. And I hope that more shows and more companies in the industry take note, and they really do that, so that they, I mean, that's been our goal with our podcast, was to have these conversations with people that you don't often hear from, because, you know, what they do is important, and what they do, it could inspire someone, you know, who's in college or someone who's out of college or someone who's in high school, you know, who doesn't realize, because, you know, when I was in school, I didn't realize like that there were other jobs out there besides just acting. And then you learn a little bit more, you learn a little bit more. And so I think it's important.
We came up with like a couple like fun, I think fun questions that we're going to maybe use to end the episode if we like. Okay. So you're our guinea pig. What is one thing in the theater industry that confuses you?
Ooh. Oh God. That's so hard. Why is it so hard?
Well, okay. I love this. That's actually the same reaction we get for our last question.
Really? Yeah, which is a totally different question.
What is one thing in the theater industry that confuses me? Well, why we turn on the ghost light at night? Like, I don't get it. Like, I get it, but I don't understand, like, why it has to happen. Ain't nobody there.
I love it. What? I'm not even going to respond to most of these. I'm just going to ask. What are three adjectives that describe your favorite working environment?
Ooh, this is good. Three adjectives. Inclusive, fierce, and fun.
Is there something in your process that you find unique to you?
Getting to know the people, investing in the person and not the product. That's one thing that I try to do on each project that I work on.
Who is your favorite playwright or genre?
I will have to say, off the top of my head, my favorite playwright is probably Terrell Alvin McCraney. I did some workshops of his production of Choir Boy, and just watching him work in the room with the cast was magic. I love that.
What is one hobby that you have outside of the theater?
Well, I just recently became a plant zaddy. So
I'm a gardener.
I have a lot of plants at home.
Yeah.
So I would go with that.
What is one job in the theater industry that you would trade jobs with for 1 week?
Now, okay, I'm going to ask a follow-up question. Do I have to be good at it, or do I just have to want to do it?
You just have to want to do it, but only for a week. So it could be really difficult, and you only have to do it for 8 shows.
I would love to be a choreographer. I wouldn't be great at it, but I would love to just, I love like when choreographers get in their groove and they're like, they're not counting and they're just making up stuff and like, and they're like in these eccentric outfits. And I love that. I would love to be a choreographer for a week. Oh no, my bell's ringing. I probably messed it up.
That's okay. What is your favorite or go-to pre-show or after-show meal?
Pre-show. It was usually Kodama because you can go over there and pick it up quick. I love some sushi, take it to the theater. That was normally pre-show. Post-show would be the chicken couscous at Glass House Tavern with a glass of Cabernet.
Wow.
Okay.
I want it now.
Me too. I miss both of those places.
Oh my God. Okay. All right. So our last question that we usually ask all of our guests is, what is the last great piece of theater that you saw?
Well, I'm going to have to go with Tina, only because if you have seen Tina on Broadway, you know that Adrian Warren is giving the performance of the year, hands down, period. It is not up for discussion.
They that woman have just given her the Tony Award, even though
right, that, no what that woman awards. Is doing on that stage is... I saw it twice, and I don't see shows twice. That girl, she is incredible. She's incredible. So I'll have to go with Adrian Warren's performance and Tina Turner.
Yeah, listen, guys, if a stage manager tells you they saw a show twice, they don't have the time for that. So they're seriously in love with the show or the performance.
Listen, when theater opens back up, I'm going to go see her do it again because beautiful. Now you know her vocals have been resting. So it's just going to be even more incredible.
You're right. Right. You're so
and
right.
Ryan and I keep saying that we like are dying to be at the first the first show, you know, when Broadway opens back up, we like want to be in the theater.
No, like, you're not. I've been talking to my friends about it, and I was like, we all like when we open back up, what show are we seeing?
You know,
like if we're not working on something, what are we seeing? Like,
yeah,
you know. So I can't wait.
Well, thank you so much for coming on Page to Stage. For our listeners out there, how can they find you on social media?
You can find me on Twitter, which I don't tweet that much, or Instagram. I'm very active on Instagram at Cody Renard, CodyRenard.
Beautiful.
Great. And I'll put all of that in the description notes for you guys to go ahead and click right on. Well, thank you. This was amazing. I had so much fun. It's
Me
always
too.
Great to chat with
by.
People, you know, especially now that we're not able to physically connect with people. It's nice to still have this
humans.
Opportunity.
I miss you so much.
Well, soon, hopefully, you know,
I know.
One day. Thanks everyone for listening to this episode of Page to Stage. To keep up with us, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Page to Stage Podcast.
And if you're enjoying these conversations, we would really appreciate it if you could take a couple minutes to rate and review us wherever you're listening to this podcast. Until next time.
That's Brian.
That's Mary.
We'll see you later.
Bye.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.